Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Let us go right to the first topic. This was in the news this week. It's a case that's going to affect everyone who watches movies and cable television. On Monday, 12 Democratic state attorneys general filed a lawsuit in California to block the merger between Paramount and Warner Brothers. It's a $111 billion deal. It's a big deal. The case is led by California, and the argument is that the merger violates our laws, our antitrust laws, because it reduces competition. So I want to talk about the basis for the suit. I want to talk about the issues involved and how this could impact the way that you see your movies and watch cable. And to weigh in on the topic is William Kovacic, who is a professor at George Washington University Law School, where he heads up the competition law center that deals with these issues. He is the preeminent legal scholar in the area of antitrust laws, and he was the commissioner of the Federal Trade Commission back in the 2000s. Welcome to the show, Professor. How are you?
I'm great, Karen. This is a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So let's talk a little bit about what these parties are trying to do. Tell us about the deal, the merger of these entities, and how would the merger work?
Yeah, the merger combines two of the five leading film distributors in the United States. So it takes two of the five most important players in film distribution. Others are Universal, but it takes two of the five and combines them. The effect of that could be to improve the performance of the companies in the field of streaming, but it also might have the effect of diminishing the number of films that go through traditional film theaters. It might limit the ability of theater owners to get blockbuster films, and it could diminish competition in cable operations. And both companies have major cable operations, with Warner perhaps being most famous for in the news area with CNN.
So I want to break this down a little bit. And is this, first of all, is this a significant merger? Is this a real big deal? And you're saying it's two out of the five top film studios or whatever companies dealing with television and film. Is this a big deal?
I'd say it is a big deal, particularly because of the nature of the products, the services that they offer. They're both active in the distribution of news. Paramount owns CBS, competes with Warner, with CNN, and they're both deeply involved in providing a service and a product that is, I suppose, so intimately involved in American culture and the way in which we live, the form of entertainment that we derive. So it's not your ordinary deal. I'd call it a very significant transaction.
So let's flip and talk a little bit about antitrust laws. And I know sometimes your eyes glaze over, listeners, about antitrust laws. I don't know what that means. It sounds complicated, and this is all big stuff, and we don't know what this means. But really, can you break it down, Professor, and tell our listeners why we have these kinds of laws and how they interact with this merger to maybe put them on pause, maybe stop the merger, or maybe let the merger happen?
Now, from the earliest time of our national experiment with competition law in the late 19th century, with amendments over time, we've had controls on mergers. And the concern is that a merger, by removing an independent source of creative activity, of innovation, will diminish the consumer get in the marketplace, that it might make them pay more for the product or service, and that it reduces innovation over time, so that we won't have, in the case of this transaction, we won't have two formidable former rivals going head-to-head to come up with a better array of movie products. So the merger control regime is designed to preserve a larger number of market participants on the assumption that if you have too few, you don't have the same incentive that you would have otherwise to come up with better movies, to come up with better services that consumers like.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to ask Professor Kovacic, What, you know, does this kind of thing really encourage this idea of anti-merger laws and laws that prevent monopolies? Does that really encourage innovation, or in some cases, might it stall a little bit? And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Facebook divestiture case when we come back on the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Is there some argument that Facebook lawsuit that we saw just recently, where they were trying to break up Facebook, saying it was a monopoly, isn't that sort of punishing somebody for punishing a company for doing a good job and basically dominating the market?
You've got to be really careful there and make sure that you're not punishing success, that you're not using the law simply to go after companies that have become big and remain successful because they have a better product. And in the case of Facebook, one of the real concerns that the company raised with the court was if you'd made Instagrams operate on its own, we could not have launched them into the higher orbit that we have. So a crucial issue in the antitrust case is, what is the source of the firm's power? What is the prospect that it's going to bring a better product to market?
And, you know, it seems to me that we have antitrust laws are enforced in some administrations more aggressively than others. Is it true that there's certain administrations that will maybe look the other way when something is, is getting to be close to a monopoly? Or is it sort of a consistent application of the laws in your view?
There are some consistent themes, but we've seen, I think, especially in the last 15 years or so, we've seen a definite trend towards what I would say an ideology, a specific point of view to drive enforcement. The Biden administration, we think that there's been far too much consolidation in a variety of different sectors. We're going to dig in real hard to prevent additional consolidations from taking place. The Trump administration, by contrast, has been more welcoming to mergers. They thought the Biden team was far too strict. And you could bring these into view to an ideological view about what kind of market configuration gives you the best results. So that's a long way of saying that, yes, indeed, what we sometimes call politics, what we call ideology, can have a decisive effect on how these laws that involve broad discretion and day out.
Can you give us an example of where, say, a merger was blocked or a merger was cleared, one or the other, that really did affect the market and really affected the way people consume goods or products?
Yeah, let's take the example of vehicles that satellites into the air. The Federal Trade Commission, when I was a member of the board, allowed Lockheed Martin and Boeing to combine their operations into a single joint venture, which basically was the equivalent of a merger to monopoly because the Department of Defense establishment wanted it. The danger in that was that we're going to start to get much less effort into providing this vital service to the national government that's so important to our intelligence framework, to the well-being of all citizens. A key element of that transaction was that the FTC advocated strongly that NASA give launch opportunities to a new upstart company called SpaceX, where Elon Musk wanted to become a rocket man. So here's a transaction that allowed a merger to monopoly, but at the same time, there was an effort to ensure that you had a new entrant into SpaceX has become the most successful launch vehicle company in the world today. That's a major example of one that the deal was allowed to go ahead, but with a crucial effort to make sure that there was a second participant available in the market.
Interesting. So let's circle back to the Paramount Warner Brothers merger. My understanding is that the federal government cleared that merger, basically approved of that merger. But now we are in federal court in California with 12 attorneys general challenging that very clearance. How is it that the federal government could clear it and the issue could still be on the table in another court?
Yeah, our antitrust laws give a variety of potential plaintiffs broad standing to attack transactions or to attack other business behavior even when the federal agencies decide to stand down. So under our national laws, as interpreted by the Supreme Court, state government to go into court to block deals that the federal agencies have allowed to go ahead, or to demand stronger remedies than the federal agencies have sought. And the purpose of this very decentralized mechanism is to provide a safeguard in case any single prosecutor, including a federal prosecutor, exercise their authority because of excessive timidity, or in the worst case, some form of corruption, so that this is a deliberately decentralized system that provides a variety of safeguards against the failure of any single plaintiff. It means that the states can march ahead regardless of what the federal agencies have done.
Interesting. And so if, for instance, this court in California does say no to the merger, then what's next? Does that case go up to the Supreme Court for a decision?
It could make its way up through the appellate chain. The merging parties, if they lose at this first stage of the process before the district judge, tend to throw in the towel. They don't want their financing to be suspended in the air. They give up. But sometimes it's a matter of principle. They decide to forge ahead. So the next stop after the federal district court in San Francisco would be the Court of Appeals that sits above it. That's the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The decision there would be subject to appeal potentially to the Supreme Court. Those of us in the field would be glad to see that happen, because the Supreme Court has not weighed in on the substantive control since 1975, i.e. over a half century ago. So many of us would like to see that happen, but often the parties just give up if they lose at the district court level.
I would also imagine there's an opportunity for settlement along the way. And, you know, and I guess I'm thinking, could it be that the attorneys general could sit down and say, listen, we would drop our suit if you put a bunch of whistles and bells together to protect the consumer. And that might be that, oh, the film studios are run independently, or, you know, different elements that would put in the protections and allow the merger. Is that a possibility, too?
It's always a possibility. The Attorney General for California, Rob Bonta, on Friday, gave a very intense interview in which he said, we are ill-disposed to accept a settlement here. One possibility was, well, might the party spin off CNN? Suppose they decide to do that. His remark, and I'm quoting him, was, no and hell no, that won't be enough. We'll need much larger concessions. Would it be enough to say, for example, that if you're worried about access of theaters to major films, what about a promise by the companies that says, we'll put a certain number of films through that distribution channel? Rob Bonta, again on Friday, said, we don't want empty promises that have to be enforceable. He was strongly suggesting that he doesn't see a solution here short of an absolute. He said, we'll need a big package of divestitures, not just enough to give up CNN, and that the states are highly skeptical of so-called behavioral solutions where the firms would promise to treat theaters in a certain way, promise to treat cable subscribers in a certain way. At the moment, the position that the states are staking out in the person of Rob Bonta is, we want major divestitures, or we want an absolute prohibition. So in theory, a settlement's possible. In practice here, the states are laying down a marker that says it's going to have to be an enormously compelling set of divestitures.
So on Wednesday, there will be a ruling by the judge. That's a preliminary ruling. Can you explain to my listeners what that ruling might be, and how that's going to impact the ultimate resolution of this case?
Now, the states have asked the judge in the case, Judge Aracel Martinez-Holguin, again, in the federal district court in San Francisco, to issue an order, so-called temporary restraining order, which would mean that the parties are forbidden to complete the merger pending for the judge. The states are basically saying, we have good reason to think this is illegal. We're going to give you some of the evidence that is the basis for that. We want you to enjoin this transaction in order that you can take more time to conduct proceedings to see whether or not on the merits you think the deal is. What they want is not a permanent ban on the merger, but they want some period of time now to continue to review the merger, to have the judge conduct proceedings, take evidence that would basically hold the merger, stop the merger, stop the process, probably months, to allow the judge to carry out a more deliberate examination of the evidence. She's going to announce on Wednesday whether or not she issues that kind of preliminary relief in this case.
And that's going to signal what she's going to do ultimately. I mean, obviously, she's going to listen to the evidence. And is this going to be a jury determination or a judicial determination ultimately?
This looks as though it'll be tried. This will be tried before the judge, so there won't be a jury. And often the decision on this initial injunction, this temporary restraining order, does foreshadow what the judge will be minded to do on the merits. So it doesn't mean that if she denies it, that the states are going to give up. The parties will be happy because it's one step closer to closing the transaction. They'll force the states then to chase after them. But my sense is that even if the states don't obtain this temporary injunction on Wednesday, that they're minded to go ahead and pursue the case on the merits. So if the judge grants the temporary restraining order, that's a serious blow to the transaction, and it may foreshadow her ultimate disapproval of the transaction. And I suppose the way to bet at the moment is she'll probably grant the temporary restraining order.
Ah, interesting. Well, I'm going to hold you to that, and let's see what happens on Wednesday. This is very, very interesting. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor William Kovacic. He is a professor at the George Washington University Law School, where he serves as the director of the Competition Law Center. Thank you so much for taking part of your Sunday to talk to us.
Karen, it's my privilege. I look forward to next time.
All right. Take care.